Blog Talk Radio.
The days of having one job that lasts a lifetime are gone, only to be replaced by the new opportunities to reinvent yourself in relevant and compelling new ways. If you are fortunate to have your job for 40 or more years, God bless you. Most of this new economy will make several career change moves for individuals who are involved in it before transitioning to a permanent state of retirement. What does reinvention mean? How can you reinvent yourself without making bad choices that will cost you in the long run? And how can you reinvent yourself so that others will notice your value and promote, hire, or pay you accordingly? We'll talk to job coach expert Laverne Freeman, who knows firsthand the value of personal reinvention. Laverne has spent a lifetime helping others find new career opportunities as a small business owner, corporate recruiter, and career coach. She'll highlight her own career path while sharing insights on how you can leverage your skill sets for greater upward mobility. Put on your thinking cap and let's reinvent ourselves for career success. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. You're listening to Focus on Empowerment, and I hope that you are having a good day, night, or weekend wherever you are. If you're listening live or with the archive, we do hope that you will share this show with others, because so often you see people in key positions and you really don't know their backstory. You don't know how they've gotten from point A or point B. This show is hopefully going to give you a greater insight into a career professional who has been in the employment, recruitment, coaching space for many, many years as an entrepreneur and certainly as someone who's worked for others. And we're talking about Laverne Freeman, who we're going to bring on the line in just a few seconds. But on June 5th, we're going to devote that show to India. We may have a special guest on talking about a program later on in June, but most of the show we're going to talk about India and the trip that I took to India a week and a half ago that just really has been very transforming to me, very transformational to me. We hope that you'll get some insight, and hopefully you'll begin to do your own teaching, your own relevancy in terms of studying other countries, other communities, other societies, other ethnic groups, and you certainly can begin that process and do that process online with all the videos, all the websites that are there. And hopefully the ultimate thing is to get a passport if you are an American and go somewhere where you have not been, outside of Club Med. That's okay. But to get a passport and to go to a different part of the world where you can learn something and, most importantly, bring that learning back to your particular community. I'm going to harp on this, and I talked about this in my book on multiculturalism, because so many people really don't go anywhere. They go in their particular geographical comfort zone level. Only 30% of Americans have passports. That means 70% really don't travel outside of the United States. So that's going to be something I'm going to encourage people to do going forward, and we will talk about India and the incredible country of India during our June 5th radio program. I am delighted now to bring on my friend of many, many years who I've admired, and I know how she can really land into great, incredible spaces, do wonderful things, because she knows how to reinvent herself, and she's part of our Kitchen Cabinet Leadership Team. Laverne Freeman, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Carol. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Great. How did you, first of all, end up in the world of career coaching? I'm just sort of using that as a broad term because I know the professional skill base that you have, but when I look at the world of employment and career development, I think about you first. How did you end up in that space?
Well, I came to Massachusetts from Richmond, Virginia, and I've always kind of been in the space. In Virginia, I worked at a telephone company, and I was the first black person they hired at the CMP telephone company in that space, and they hired me in the human resources space. So I was there kind of by myself for the first 5 years, and I was there for 20 years until they broke up my bill. And at that time, I felt like I was kind of free to move about the country, and I was always interested in New England. I don't really know why, but I was. I came to New England. My grandmother lived here, and I just fell in love. And if anybody knows me, they know I have a love affair with Boston and New England. I really love this part of the country, particularly in Boston. So I got a job so I could meet people. That's been my success story. That's kind of like my mantra. I have a wonderful network of people like you and other people around town and whatever, and I just built my network, and I just gravitated towards recruitment and business development, and I've been in that field just about the entire time I've been here.
Right. Well, I want to go back because I'm intrigued now. You worked for the phone company for 20 years. I did not know that. First black person hired in that particular, and that was in the 60s. So and for those our younger members and younger listeners who are in their 20s and 30s who are listening to the show, they're not going to have any reference points. So take us back to the mid-60s when you were graduating from college and
then it was
got a job at the phone company. Yeah, you went to Howard University, I believe, right?
Yes, I did. Yes, it was tough times back there because we were still riding the back of the bus and still eating at the back lunch counter in Woolworths, and all of that was going on. And I really was not looking to work for the phone company. I was on my way to the movies, to tell you the truth. And I wasn't really looking for the phone company. They were looking for me, really. They were looking for someone who they thought was bright enough and intelligent enough to work at the phone company, and they had tables on the sidewalk recruiting people, and they just I kind of walked by, and they asked me if I wanted to work at the telephone company, a job. And I said, doing what? And I didn't want to be an operator or any of those things. Well, it was very fast. They took me into the phone company, and they signed me up and gave me a little test that I could ace. I was really pretty smart back then. And the next thing I knew, they were coming to my house making a home visit the next day. I mean, that was quite odd. Yeah, and so next thing I knew, nobody at the phone company wanted to train me because of my color of my skin. So they sent me to IBM school to learn how to run a key punch machine, which nobody knows what that is. And I was acing everything. You know, I was smart right out of college. And some of them had never had an experience with the person of color. So when I took the job, they were running by to see the colored girl, as they called me, working at the key punch machine. And that was the beginning. And it was interesting, to say the least. I had people coming up from Atlanta, Georgia, to check on me every month to make sure I was being treated fairly and all the things that go with that. So it was quite an experience.
Wow,
and they say
that
doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So
it did
kill me, but I had to be pretty strong.
Oh, that's an incredible beginning. And just, I mean, again, our younger members and listeners have no idea what a key punch machine is and all those things. Those are early days of computerization.
Yes.
Very early
days. Right. And everything that went with it, that you could imagine that went with that, I was exposed to it, I can tell you.
So you have, you know, a love affair with the Boston area, with Massachusetts. Your days with the phone company winded down, and 20 years afterward, you find yourself up here in Boston. So, again, walk us through how you ended up in the career path that you did here in the Boston area.
Well, I worked first at the World Trade Center Boston. It wasn't all glamorous like it is now. They call it the Seaport District. I worked there, and that's where I got to meet as a salesperson, started off as a receptionist. But that's where I got to meet everybody that I know, basically, because I bought a lot of events. I bought the first Stepping Out to the World Trade Center, the first
Cube Boat Ride.
Yeah, the first Cube Boat Ride. I bought those things, and I didn't know where it was located, really. So that was to my, that was good, because I really didn't know where I was located. So I just said, oh, the World Trade Center in Boston. And I bought all kinds of great events there, and that was the kickoff for Dimmock and the boat ride and those things. So that's where I got to know a lot of the people that I met, a lot of the people I met. I met them during that time that I was at the World Trade Center for about 4 years. I wanted to really, and I was, it was really a good position, but I wanted more. I wanted to get up in the financial district and to get more in the downtown crossing area and to just meet all these other people. So I went to work in the temporary business for a black man who was an entrepreneur and had been in business for quite a while, and I really enjoyed that experience because it's a whole nother world. It was a whole nother world I was exposed to. And, that's
and
what,
we were
that's
colleagues because we work for the same company, sort of different times, but you and I worked for exclusive temporaries for a number of years.
Yes, we did.
But I remember we met at the World. I remember when you worked at the World Trade Center. That's where I met you. And then clearly you transitioned and moved on and got involved in, and isn't that interesting, both of us got involved in placement and employment through an African-American company.
Exactly. And then I learned a whole nother side of the business, and I enjoyed that as well. And after working there, I was working very hard, long hours. I decided, I might could do this on my own. And I studied, and I went to purchasing classes and libraries at night, and learned how to write RFPs, and that is what got me started. I opened my own business, and the Central Artery Tunnel was coming through, and they had all this pre-startup. So then the battle begins. I did an RFP, and I managed to win a third of that contract for pre-startup, and then that's when it all started.
Right. And, again, for our listeners who don't know what the Central Artery Tunnel, this was a major project here in Boston that involved the construction of new tunnels and expressways in downtown Boston. This was a 10- or 15-year endeavor, and so companies like yours, Laverne, would submit bids for various pieces of the business. And so I'm sort of paraphrasing because, again, we have people who won't know what this is all about, and this was during the early 90s and quite a – people who have been in and out of Boston will talk about the Big Dig. So this was part of the Big Dig because it was a major construction project. Right.
Yes.
How did you find when you've gone, talk about reinvention, this is why the theme was so appropriate. You've gone from the phone company in a post-segregated Virginia to the World Trade Center in sales to employment opportunities with an African-American company to your own company within a like a 25-year span of time, should I say?
That's correct. That is correct. That was another reinvention. That is correct. But I have to tell you
already.
That Ma Bell, that's what we used to call the telephone company, if every training I have, everything I know how to do right now today came from the telephone company. They train you so well, and I took advantage of every course that came through. Every course that came through. I was in management there, of course. I made it up the line. I was headed to New York to AT&T, and they and Ma Bell broke up, and that's when they broke up Ma Bell. And I said, okay, I've learned all this stuff. I'm going to put it to good use. And it wasn't really a market for what I wanted to do in Virginia, so I said, I'm going someplace else, New York, Chicago, D.C., or Massachusetts, Boston. Boston, and I came to Boston because I had somewhat of a support system. My grandmother lived here, and so
right,
I said
right.
I needed a support system. This is where I came to
mm-hmm.
Boston, but and I used everything, the same things that I'm using now, those skills
mm-hmm.
I got from the phone company. That's what I've been using all this time, and it works.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And again, when you reinvent yourself, you don't leave your skills behind. You take them
no.
with you, and
you take them
they
with
become
you.
More adaptable with your new position. So
exactly.
So I want to talk maybe for a minute or two about your career path when you started your own business and you were in business. And I know you had million-dollar contracts, so I know you had a very
yes.
large operation. What was that like to scale up, to start your business, and then to scale up your business to a very high level where you were servicing large contracts?
Well, it was very, very tough in Massachusetts because there was not a big, large support system of women or people of color, period, doing what I was doing. So
mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of time kicking indoors, believe it, kicking indoors. I mean, going to the head of companies rather than working with people in the middle management because
mm-hmm.
I had to go to the head to be taken serious because sometimes I was referred to as that woman who has an office down on the water somewhere because I had an office
mm-hmm.
in the World Trade Center. And it was very tough. I was told several times that I should leave Boston and go to Chicago or go to D.C. and whatever and set up my business. I loved Massachusetts. I didn't want to leave, so I spent about 2 years kicking indoors. I mean, actually kicking indoors and revving up. And 2 years of that, I don't think it was wasted, but I did spend 2 years kicking indoors. So I worked mainly on RFPs rather than trying to work on individual companies, working on one company, two companies. I went to companies that put out an RFP because it was the
mm-hmm.
safest way, it was the fairest way most of the time that I could think of. Even though you only got a small piece of the pie, it got you in the door.
Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about, again, I'm translating for our mm-hmm. listeners who don't know, an RFP is a request for proposal, and this is typically a project, a larger project or some aspect of a project where they already have a predetermined budget and you as a company submit a proposal, submit your proposal it for consideration of either a taking over or winning the entire contract or a portion of the contract. It just depends on how things are spelled out. So that meant when you won a contract, that put many people to work, right, Laverne?
Right, and for minorities and woman-owned businesses, we called it SAMBA. You got SAMBA certified. You got a small piece of the business. Now, a lot of people didn't like that because you only got a tiny piece, but I would take that tiny piece and I would do the best job that we could do with my little staff, and we would work and work so well and so hard and get the best people in there that when it came around the next time, say 2 years later, we got a bigger piece of the pie, and then we got a
mm-hmm.
bigger piece of the pie. So we had worked up to, we had sometimes half of the contract and in some cases all of the contract.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard,
mm-hmm.
but that's how we would do it, and
right,
we would get
right.
it done.
So 11 years, lots of successes, I'm sure, highs and lows.
Yeah.
I've been in that business, so I know about all the highs and lows. I know the cash that's involved because you've got to pay people and all those kind of things. So your transition, you then transition out of the business. So tell us about that time period.
Well, during that time period, it was very difficult for a black woman in Massachusetts to actually get a very good partner, and I needed
mm-hmm.
a partner. I needed someone that I could do the sales out in the field. We didn't have all these fancy computers and cell phones and things. So
right.
I needed someone on the inside that I could just call in the business and keep rolling, keep going, that I didn't have to run into the office and make sure the orders were filled, et cetera. I could keep going. And I never found a partner in the time I was in business that I could actually do that and depend on. So I was just burning myself myself out, which I ended up burning myself out. So I decided to sell the business, sell the contracts. I had a great exit strategy. I tell anybody who's in business for themselves, make sure you have an exit strategy, because it's what saved me. It's say I found jobs for all my people. I was able to wind my contracts down, and I took a six-month break. It didn't do anything. Bored myself to death, and I said, okay, now what do I do? So the next step, I reinvented myself to do outplacements, and I did that for 4 years. And if you know what outplacements what outplacement is, it's not a fun thing. You make lots of money, but it wasn't fun for me. I didn't like it, but I did it to know the business. And I know how to do it. And I don't want to do it again.
that was a four-year run, a closed deal. So you got in it and you got out of it. So that's basically helping people who have lost their jobs, and you were helping them make their transition from one company to another company. I'm assuming that that's what we're talking about.
Well, I was helping people try to reinvent themselves to another company. It all it doesn't always work out like it should, but it wasn't a happy thing to tell people that you've lost your job. Basically, and let me help you back into another job. I wasn't, it didn't fit my personality that well, because I'm very upbeat. So I did it for 4 years.
So then you moved 4 years, and then after that 4 years, walk us through that time period up until now.
Okay, so after that, I had not done too much corporate recruiting, so I decided that I would work for somebody who did a full desk. I really wasn't interested then in going back into business for myself. I thought I would work for companies that ran a full desk, and that's permanent placement. So when you run a full desk, you sell your own, you sell to companies, you get their orders that they have, and you fill them yourself. So it's like having your own small mini business inside of a large company, and that's like the best possible space to have if you don't have your own business. You go out and you sell to your own clients, you get their orders, you come in and you fill those orders, and that's what I did for quite a while, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. But the recession comes the recession comes in and you don't get orders. So you don't have, so you have no orders to fill, and you're kind of out there by yourself again in a large company, and it's like, okay, what do you do now? So then you reinvent yourself again, and thus that's what I'm doing now. I'm at Operation Able. I'm the job coach.
And tell us what you're doing with this eighth or ninth. I've lost track of the reinvention. Clearly, you land on your feet, but tell us what it's like and the kind of work and the servicing that you do within Operation Able.
Well, because I know the trends and I watch the trends and I know the business cycle and I know how it works because I've been in it so long, recessions and all that kind of thing doesn't get under my skin. When I had my own business, I went through three of those, and I know how to stay flat. I've never laid anybody off out of my company. I know how to run a tight ship. I know how to run a tight ship and how to lay flat, and I know how to have things to do that need to be done when the market is flat, because most of the time you either have a lot of orders and no people, or you have people and you have no job orders. But I know how to lay flat. I know how to do that very well. So I know how to handle that. So what I'm doing now at Operation Able is we are a company here, and we're the only one that does this in Massachusetts. We cater to people that are 40 and over that are unemployed, people who are conducting a serious job search for 2 months or longer, but they have not, they have the cards like stacked against them. And they're sometimes it's age bias. Sometimes they just don't have the computer skills or the networking skills. They don't know how to really go out there and get a job. They've had the same job for 14 years, 17 years. They thought they'd always be there. They would retire there. And all of a sudden they find themselves laid off or replaced by something, a machine or whatever, and they don't know what to do. And they don't know how to interview anymore. You know, they don't know how to get on the Internet and fill out an online education. They just don't know what they don't know. And that's where I come in.
And so you help them, enhance their skills, clearly provide them the resources so that ultimately the goal is for them to get employment, to become gainfully employed as a result of Operation ABLE and using your services as the job coach.
Exactly. We have several programs here. We have one for people that's called Beginnings that don't know anything about the computer. Maybe they know how to turn it on, maybe. That's ABLE Beginnings. That's the first step. The second is Skills to Work. People that know something, maybe know how to Google or look on Facebook or something, but really don't know, have any Microsoft or Excel or PowerPoint. That's Skills to Work, 12 weeks with a six-week internship. And then we have a medical technology that's a really, everybody loves that program because that teaches you office skills and medical terminology, which is really popular and really hot out there. Lots of jobs mm-hmm. for that. They come here and they learn how to do that. They can do QuickBooks, learn all the medical terminology. And then I come in and guide them through the purple rain, as they call it, guide them to get to that recruiter, to get to the hiring manager, how not to take no for an answer, how to network, how to get on LinkedIn, how to interview, all of that, that's what I do.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And how can someone get in touch with, you are the queen of reinvention, now
yep.
you refresh my memory about your story and who you are, but there may be some listeners who want to learn more from you and want to know more, either from your personal story or else about Operation ABLE. How can people get in touch with you?
Okay. They can call me here at 617-542-4180, and they don't have to go through our computer. All of these programs stand alone, including mine. So if you are a mm-hmm. second level or first level management or whatever, you don't have to be in management, but I usually get more management people on my side. If you want to come in and make use of my network and all the things and people that I know and don't know, but all of my skills, I can help you individually. You don't have to go through ABLE's program. I'm a program by myself. You mm-hmm. can give me a call, 617-542-4180. If you do need some of the other classes that we have to get in order to get to me at the very end of it or when you're getting ready to graduate from the classes, you can call to find out about the other classes at the same number, and the receptionist will gladly point you in the right direction. Or every Wednesday at 10 o'clock, we have an overview of all of the classes, and I'm a speaker at that as well, and that's at 174 Portland Street on the fifth floor in Boston. But you should call to make a reservation because those sessions are packed every Wednesday at 10 o'clock.
Great. Mm-hmm. And very quickly, two things that most people don't know about Laverne Freeman. Share them with us now.
That I rode the back of the bus when I was in Virginia. That's one thing. And my grandmother took me out. She raised me every Sunday. We would ride in the white neighborhoods. And she said, you see, you're going to have a house like that. You're going to be very successful, and you're going to work for yourself. You're not going to work for anybody else. That's probably,
wow, how prophetic she was.
Ever since I was 5 years old, I got that speech every Sunday.
Wow.
And then I have two grandkids. Most people know that I'm from Virginia, but I have two grandkids. One lives in Richmond, and I have a daughter that she's a doctor. She has her PhD, and I have a daughter that's here, and she has one. I have one grandkid here and one in Virginia.
That's great. Well, we've learned an awful lot from you. I thank mm-hmm. you so much for your tenacity. And again, I'm listening, taking notes. You're telling your clientele, don't take no for an answer. And you
know,
by reinventing yourself in such a powerful way, you've been an entrepreneur and you certainly worked for some great companies. I'm glad that we're connected, and I hope this has been an inspiration for other people to realize that you too can invent and reinvent
yes.
and reinvent and reinvent
yes.
yourself. There may be three
exactly.
chapters in your lives before you drop dead, so don't give up. Laverne Freeman, you've been a great inspiration. Thank you very much for being on my show today.
And tell them don't settle. Do not settle. Don't settle. Just don't kick in and
like
settle.
That
That's
one.
What Steve Jobs said. Don't settle.
Ah, good point. Very good point.
Okay.
Thank you, Laverne. Thank you.
Thank you,
and for our absolutely. And for our listeners, too, you may want to go back and listen to some previous episodes where I feature Laverne Freeman. She has great information to share with all of us. And we'll do this again and again to show you how you can reinvent yourself wherever you happen to be. Have a great week or weekend. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas signing off. We'll talk to you next week.